Welcome to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. I'm Jen Godet, your fearless host, entrepreneur, investor, and business strategist. Why are we here? Because I believe that iron sharpens iron. And when we bring industry leaders, industry disruptors, those who have been there and done that, to share what's working in business and perhaps even what's not, we are all able to learn and grow. As a result, our businesses grow, and the ripple effect impacts not only ourselves, our teams, and their families, but also our communities and our world. Today, you're in for a treat because we're going to talk about something every entrepreneur wants, but few intentionally build: wealth. I'm not talking about revenue, commissions, and cash flow. I'm talking about real wealth. My guest today, Amy Lippincott, has built an impressive ecosystem that spans real estate, investing, franchise ownership, commercial real estate, mortgage partnerships, and the list goes on. What fascinates me most is Amy is always asking one question: what's next? Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm really excited to have this conversation because, seriously, what's next? When did your thinking shift from earning money and building that business and focusing on the cash flow and the revenue to truly building ownership and something that generates wealth for you and your family?
Well, I tend to get bored quickly. And so just doing the commission thing over and over and over, after a while, it became to watching other people do it and thinking, I can do that also. And so deciding what was the next step for us was key for sure.
And so what sparked your obsession with what's next? Because when we talked, you maybe asked that, you said that probably 5-6 times the first conversation that we had. So what sparked that what's next obsession? What really is it that drives you?
Well, I think for sure I have a driver personality, which helps everything in my mind never stay still. And so then knowing that I wanted to build a legacy for my family and not just be about this one business, what could I do that was going to impact tomorrow and actually 10 years down the road?
Okay, so was there a moment in time when you first started this journey where you were like, hey, income and wealth are not the same thing? And what was it like, what was that light bulb moment, if there was one? Or was there something that happened that you said, you know what, I need to diversify here?
So real estate's a big, big name, right? There's lots of facets to real estate. And so then deciding what did I want to add to our portfolio next? And then most importantly, what could I do with my team together was really, really important to me. And then what things could my family do on their own too to keep growing and not just be about each paycheck living month to month? That part of it was so hard for me.
You know, and real estate's been through the ringer recently. We were actually talking at lunch about this. And so with that in mind, you're really fascinated and you're really driven to bring your team along with you and to bring your team along with you even in the investment arena. So talk to me a little bit about what's happening in the real estate market now and why now is the perfect time to be thinking about what is that diversification, what does that investment strategy look like for the real estate professionals out there?
So if you haven't been through a full real estate cycle in your career yet, it's coming. You know, you just wait a week even at this moment. Real estate looks different every single week now for us. So the market is ever changing. Interest rates are ever changing. But knowing that that cycle is going to continue and you have to be strong enough to make it through that. And that this is not just a yearly career. This is something that you've dedicated the rest of your life to. So always learning, always growing, always having mentors that are better than you and looking up to other people, and then being able to diversify what your portfolio is so you're not just tied to if this house sells today or tomorrow.
You know, I think that's really sage advice. And so talk to me a little bit more specifically, because this doesn't just apply in real estate. It's also, we see this in insurance, we see this in employees even, but what separates that entrepreneurial mindset, that investors type mindset, from producers who are just simply, they own a business that pretty much owns them?
So I think just knowing that I didn't want to do this rest of my life. I was a teacher previously for 16 years and I loved that part of my life. It was a great part of my life. I learned so many things and made so many good relationships. Real estate is completely real estate driven, relationship driven. And so that's been very successful for us. But then realizing that down the road, do you want to still be opening doors when you're 80 years old for people?
Oh yeah, that's a big one. So I was in medicine for 20 years and mine was, I loved helping people. I loved peak performance. I worked with elite athletes for a living. Everybody was like, oh, you have the dream job. But I was so exhausted. I knew I had to make a shift and not be that caregiver anymore or in that practitioner role. I had to make the shift and do other things because I was a PT, so my body was a limiting factor. And so I really appreciate that you saw that, you've made that shift and you've had that thought, but I really appreciate even more that you're bringing your team along with you. We'll dive into that later. But I wanna now open up to the world of opportunity because you made the observation that diversification becomes necessary. You need to have something for when you get older. Do you wanna be opening doors? Talk to me about the biggest opportunity that you pursued, even if it didn't go well.
Okay. The biggest opportunity I pursued was truly getting my real estate license and starting jumping careers from one thing to the other. That was really hard. Everyone told me not to do that. Everyone's like, you have retirement here, you have a set paycheck, you have insurance. And I just couldn't see doing this for the rest of my life, the same thing over and over and over. And that's what I love about real estate is that it's a different challenge every day, a different way to solve a problem, a different relationship, a different client. And that's the part that keeps me going is the change every single day.
So that was the biggest opportunity and you took it and you made something because you're a driver and you're successful by your own right. I mean, I would describe you as an elite business athlete.
Thank you.
Tell me about the opportunity that you missed, like the one that came by and you just didn't take it. And what was it that made you not take it? What does that look like?
So early on in our career, we were with a different brokerage and an opportunity came along to go with EXP. And I did not take it early on. I was scared and I wanted to stay where it was safe and I'm super loyal and I wanted to stay where the loyalty arrived and I wanted to stay with the same people and just keep growing that and thinking that change would come and believing that change would come and change did not come. And so I made that decision probably about 4 or 5 years too late. And if I had jumped on, life would look differently.
Oh, I'm sure, you know, a lot of times we do that, especially early on when we're first moving into investing too. Like there's all these opportunities and we're sitting on the sideline, we're waiting for that perfect set of criteria. But folks, let me just tell you, perfect never happens. And it's always more comfortable to be complacent and stay where you are. That discomfort is in moving to something different or getting into something different, but that's where really everything unlocks. So next, let me ask the follow-up question, and that's, opportunities are coming to you every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been living this life, you have multiple businesses. How do you stay opportunistic, able to catch the diamonds in the rough when they come through without getting distracted by the shiny objects?
Ooh, that's a hard question for me because I like shiny objects and I work really hard to slow my roll. So my brain moves faster than most people's a lot of times in thinking what's next, what's next, what's next. So absolutely trying to slow down and really think about what is the best opportunity and then seeing who can I surround myself with and then also seeing how does it play into the current opportunities that we have right now and then who can I involve that can partner with me to move along.
So let me ask you about that because you have multiple businesses in the real estate vertical. How do you weigh which one is the next one you're going to actually take if say you've got two or three adjacent verticals that make sense? Like how do you decide? What does that decision matrix look like for you?
So our 5-year plan is that our team will be a one-stop shop, that we will have a title company, a mortgage company, insurance company, maybe mobile notary company. I don't know what all the opportunities are, but I know that people talk to us about them all the time. And so just deciding that when you come to our team, you don't have to go outside of our team to find anything else. We have it all right there for you with people that we've vetted, with people that have been successful, and with people that actually get the job done quickly and efficiently.
And so how do you make the determination between acquiring a company or a vertical and embedding a partnership, if you will, or JV with some of these other verticals?
So I tend to lean more towards the partnership thing because I believe there's power in partnerships and those people are always one step ahead and they're the expert in their field and they know exactly what they're doing. And so if I can learn from them and grow from them, and it depends on who's in the JV also. We just recently joined a title JV. We moved from one to the other. And this one has more power players. It has people that have been there, done that, and that are 10 times more successful than we are. And I want to learn from them. I want to keep growing. I want to keep asking those questions with them.
I really like that you said that you're looking at who's at that next level so that you can learn and grow. And we've talked about this on the show a lot. Folks, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're the most successful person in the room, you're in the wrong room. That's going to stunt your growth rather than allow it. And you just heard from Amy, the best opportunity for you is to partner with people who are at that next level so that you can learn from them, grow, and continue to move forward. So I love to have actionable takeaways. I think from this conversation so far, I want you to think about this. Ask yourself, if I stopped working tomorrow, what is going to continue to generate value for me and my business? And if your answer is very little, that's where you want to focus. Focus on how can I build something that isn't reliant upon me and myself in the day-to-day to continue to grow. Because the reality is the goal isn't to build a business that depends on you. That's just a fancy word for a job. The goal is to build assets that create value whether or not you're there. Folks, if you're loving the content, join our Power CEOs Facebook group. Follow me on LinkedIn. Let me know. Let me hear what your questions are. But we do have to take a brief break. And coming up next, Amy has built businesses from scratch. She's bought into existing systems. Which creates more wealth, buying business or building one? The answer might surprise you after these messages. Back to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. Folks, entrepreneurs love starting things. Investors love buying things. The wealthiest people often know when to do both. One of the biggest decisions that entrepreneurs face is whether to build from zero or acquire something that's already working. Amy, you've done both. You've built businesses, you've invested in businesses, you've acquired opportunities. Let's talk about the realities nobody discusses. Looking back, what are the advantages of buying, you bought into franchise, for example, versus building like you did in real estate?
So buying into a franchise, there's a set of rules that's already there for you, established. There's people who've gone before you and been successful, but you still have to blaze your own trail. You're still in your own area. You're still in your own location. You're still right where you need to be. And you've chosen all of that for yourself, even if with the franchise. And so those things, the marketing that goes along with that, the working hard and developing your own clientele, the getting people in the door, that's still all up to you. But the franchise name, hopefully that you're buying into, has some value, which has been very helpful for us with our HTO.
So let me ask you, what attracted you to HTO and did you look at other opportunities in addition to this one? And what was it that was the differentiator that said, you know what, these people have it together, they have exactly what I need and I know I'm gonna be successful with this?
So we did. We had actually gone about three rounds into Chick-fil-A and then they wanted us to sell my real estate business and have it just be a woman-owned Chick-fil-A, and no way in the world was I selling my real estate business because that was my love. But then we started just looking around at different things and different opportunities, different brands, what they meant. We went to a HTO in Lubbock, Texas, and we were at a horse show and walked in, and the atmosphere was friendly. The young people were there that were wonderful, and we really thought that that was an opportunity to not only grow our wealth and grow our family, but grow young people. And so that's been really exciting to have that opportunity with our family also. But that is what spurred us to call. And when my husband called, they were like, oh, your wife called 3 years ago about this. I'd totally forgotten that I had done that. He called and he's like, did you really call them? I was like, oh yeah, I totally did. But at that time it wasn't, we were in the middle of Chick-fil-A stuff. So that didn't work out, but it's been a great opportunity for us.
Well, I just want to highlight what she just said, folks. Like, she had called 3 years prior, but it wasn't the right time because she had made the decision to go forward with the Chick-fil-A process. But the timing, the opportunity was still there when it was right for them, when they were ready for it and it was the right move for them. So a lot of times entrepreneurs, and Amy, maybe you see this too, like we get shiny object syndrome. We're afraid we're going to miss out. Or we're afraid if we don't take this opportunity, even if it's not the right opportunity for us exactly right now, that we're going to never have that chance again. So you just went through that. You went through that because you made the call and then you went down the road and didn't even end up with Chick-fil-A. And then you guys found that opportunity later and you're mentoring your team. How do you pass that lesson to your team? Because I think that would be really valuable for the audience.
To my real estate team?
Yes, so that they don't necessarily go for the opportunity that's not perfect for them at the moment.
So I think vetting opportunity is so important, and how you do that should be a step-by-step process, and there's no guarantees, obviously, but using the steps that are in front of you and using all of your resources to vet. We once tried to buy into a cleaning company, and we actually gave our money to them as a team. We all came together. We looked through their books, all the things. Well, I'd never thought to run a criminal record on this person. So hard lesson learned immediately, because there were some criminal records. They'd cooked the books, things like that. The guilt of that involving my team over that was super hard to get over, but great lesson learned. So.
Right. I mean, some of our hardest lessons are those, unfortunately. And listen, folks, like, I think that there's a lesson there as well. She still went forward. They came together and they went through the process. And the learning from that, even though maybe you lose money on some opportunities, the learning is really powerful. And in my career, both in sports medicine and in every industry that I've had a business in and in investing, I've learned more from my failures than I have from my successes. So let's play on that now. So because you went through that process and you went through that process with your team, if you were to start over today and look at maybe acquiring housekeeping, what would you do differently? How would you do this differently? Would you start it from scratch? Would you build it? Would you buy it? Like, and what would you do differently with your team?
I think I would buy it again, because I don't know that business very well. It's not my area of expertise. I would hire a business mentor to look, help me look through the books and to know more what I'm talking about, since going through P&Ls is not my specialty. I do it, but it's not my area of expertise. And so I would make sure that I had surrounded myself with people who knew exactly what they were looking at. I would obviously run criminal backgrounds, which, you know, lesson learned on that. But just making sure that all the right steps are in place and that I'm surrounding myself with everybody who sits at my table is the smartest person in the room.
That's fantastic. And I think it's sage advice. And so let's talk about the hidden challenges of buying a business, because you bought a franchise, and I don't want anybody to think that buying a business is without challenges, because that's absolutely not the case. So what are the hidden challenges of buying in a business as opposed to building one?
So I think I can talk about that from both ways. On the real estate end, in our first JV with our title company, it was making sure that I thought everyone would want to perform their best as a part of the JV. And I was shocked to learn that not everybody does. Some people just want to skate, and some people just want to, you know, relax and not do all the hard work. And so that was very surprising to me, that we're all not there for the same common cause and to all make the most money. So that was hard in that one. But in the franchise, I think the hardest part about that is that there are rules in place. And I understand that there are rules in place for a reason. And sometimes we don't understand the reasons. Like with HTO, we have some social media issues that we want to more control of our social media, and they're not into that yet. And so hopefully we'll grow towards that. But at the time, I have to understand the reasoning behind why the rules were made.
Yeah, you know, and entrepreneurs, like, for the record, we're not meant to follow rules. We're entrepreneurs because we make the rules so that we can break the rules as we grow. So talk to me about the hidden challenges of building a business. What are the things that you wish somebody would have told you before you built your first business?
Oof, that's a hard one. For sure, I wish that I had known to slow down, like I mentioned before. I wish that I had learned to surround myself with bigger and better people. I wish that I had had not just a 3-year plan, but a 5-year and a 10-year plan. I've learned to plan way more in advance. I wish that I had learned that when you go to a convention and you learn all these great new fancy things, you don't have to implement them all tomorrow. So I do have a person on my team who always is regulating me, like, slow down, we're gonna do one thing at a time, which I'm so appreciative of. I've also learned that not everyone has to be just like you, that you do need people that are not drivers. If everyone is like you and everyone has this personality that's go, 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 you're going to go way too fast and you're not going to succeed. So learning from everybody's strengths and weaknesses is key.
And making sure that team has every weakness covered as well. I think that's really powerful. So I'm going to talk a little bit about HTO for a moment, if we can. So most franchise owners only own the franchise company or the operating company. But you own the operating company, you own the land and the building on the land. How does that change the economics of the deal when you're evaluating the deal?
So it meant that we had to put a lot more money into it, obviously. But I could not picture at this moment, we may do it differently next time, but I could not picture building, say $1 million building on someone else's land, and then they now owned our building. That was really hard for me as a real estate professional to digest. And so if we were gonna do it, in my opinion, go big or go home. I mean, let's own the land, let's go all in. And so I'm very thankful that we have a nice size asset now that is in our portfolio, and our, you know, is the note high? Yes, but do I know that we can do it every month? Absolutely. And so the challenges are you have to get more funding, you have to make sure you're on solid ground when you're moving forward, and that there's monthly dips and highs and lows in revenue, just like every other business.
And you know, the interesting part of that is also you don't have to do just due diligence on the operating company. You have to do due diligence on the real estate as well. Is this real estate that's going to appreciate in value? Is it in a right location? Is it in a location that's going to devalue over time because it's not in the path of progress? So there's an elevated level of due diligence that you had to go through as well, which you're uniquely suited for since you're in real estate already. So folks, like actionable takeaways, things that we can think about right now. Before you're buying or building a business, ask where is the real value? Sometimes the real business is sometimes the value is the business, and sometimes it's the real estate, like in the example we just discussed. Sometimes it's the customer base if you're buying. So it's really important you understand what it is that you're doing if you're buying versus building. Where are the pitfalls? Where are the challenges? And then you hire the right mentors. Amy, you've said probably 3 or 4 times already this segment alone and in the prior as well, surround yourselves by the people who are going to help you along the way, like the financial, the CPA to help you look at the numbers and make sure you're not going to get into trouble, for example. If people are looking for a mentor in business, what would you be looking for before you go into your next endeavor, if you will?
I'm looking for someone who's been there, done that, and not just once, that someone who's done it multiple times over. I'm looking for somebody who I've seen growth in every time they do a different project. I'm looking for somebody that is calm and collected and can handle all my questions. And I have lots and lots of questions. I'm looking for someone who does the research. You know, even if you're picking a doctor, I like to know the research on that doctor and how many people they've, you know, seen and interviewed and who's used them before. But in the project world, for sure, you want people who also have other facets of business that are not just in one lane, that people who are experienced with all the areas of what you're going into.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I always have several mentors. I generally have between 6 and 7 business mentors at any given time for that reason, because I move fast. Like you, I move fast. I want to be able to take advantage of whatever opportunities are ahead of me, whether it's in the investing world or the active entrepreneurial side of things. And I'm doing that for my clients as well. So I really appreciate that answer. Folks, many entrepreneurs focus on business. The smartest ones focus on the assets behind the business. What does that look like and what are you building towards? Up next, Amy has an unusual vision. She doesn't just want her team to make money. She wants them to become investors. And that changes everything. Stick around. We'll be right back after these messages. What if the greatest thing you could give your team isn't a raise? What if it's a pathway to ownership? Most leaders focus on helping people to earn more. Very few focus on helping people build wealth. I'm here with Amy Lippincott, and we've been talking about business, buy versus build. What are the challenges? What are the learnings? And how to sort and sift through opportunities? But Amy, you've talked about helping your team invest together and help them think differently about money. What is it that drove that vision? Where did that vision come from?
Well, so first of all, I developed a team much differently than most people. Everyone says, don't hire your friends, don't work with family. And so I have only added, usually, people that are my friends or were clients and then become agents on our team. Not always, you know, over the years, 15, 16 years, things have changed a little bit where we've added some different people, but more than likely, they're someone I've known in the past and known their work ethic, known their drive, things like that. So it's always been very successful for us in that manner. And then deciding that it's lonely when you're doing it by yourself, actually. And I'm a very social person. And so doing things together is much more fun, first of all, but it's also more beneficial. It creates employee retention. It creates better teamwork. It creates a better social environment. And everyone loves getting a mailbox check.
That's absolutely right. I like mailbox money.
Yes.
So talk to me a little bit about financial literacy, because when we're hiring, whether we're hiring friends and family and past clients, or we're hiring people we don't know, financial literacy is something that is critical for not only for moving into the investment mindset, but for our team, so that we're helping them truly to grow and realize their dreams and their goals. So why is financial literacy important, and where are the key areas that you have found mentoring them in this arena to be the biggest bang for your buck, if you will?
So a lot of people come into real estate and think, I'm going to have a closing tomorrow and make 10 grand, or I'm going to make $100,000 this very first year I do it. It's hard. It's a hard business to grow. You have to rely on yourself and rely on your sphere of influence and all those things. So I think when people come and sit down with me, the first thing I say is, do you have 6 months of savings in your bank account right now? Because you could not have a closing for 6 months. I hope you don't. I don't want you to, but you could. And so that's the very first part of literacy teaching right there. And then how to save for taxes, how to maneuver taxes as a real estate agent is super different than anything I've ever done in my past. And so making sure that they understand a lot of those things, key things, is really great. And then just teaching them that it is beyond living paycheck to paycheck or living month to month. You want to provide for your family 10 years from now. If something happens to you tomorrow and you're in a car accident, what happens next? How are you going to go show houses if that happens? And so that's been really key, is to helping them understand those things.
And so what you're really doing is you're helping them take ownership over their financial health and well-being. And so tell me this, why do so many people, even when they know that that's the way to get independent financially or more secure financially, they still don't make that shift from income to investing?
It takes a lot of work. I mean, it's a lot of work, you know, just in the very basic part of it. You need to set up your LLC, you need to set up your bank account, you need to get a lawyer involved. You know, all those things take time, effort, money. And so a lot of people don't want to do all that. It's very time consuming.
And so what happens when they actually make that shift and now they're thinking like owners, because they're like, okay, Amy's been telling me I need to do this. I'm going to just bite the bullet and take the time and the money and invest in myself. Like, what changes in your team when they make that shift?
They're excited. You know, they see the possibility of a different future. They see the possibility of the way things could look in their checkbook and in their family's legacy. And those things have been really, really key to letting people understand this is the next step. Yes, you might invest 10 grand in this, but it's going to provide how much money on your ROI. And so that's been really key for them, is understanding that this is not about today. It is about tomorrow and about the next tomorrows.
And so a lot of entrepreneurs are business owners, and really what they are is they've created their own job, right? A lot of people watching may be stuck in that loop where they're founder-centric. I describe it as founder-centric. Businesses are dependent upon the founder, and we can't extricate ourselves because we're afraid to make that hire to replace ourselves. Maybe our value is locked up in the tasks or the production that we do. How have you been able to shift that for yourself and really remove that founder dependency, if you will? And how have you been able to shift that in your teams? Like, how do we make that mindset shift? Because I think that would be really valuable for many of our audience.
So first of all, making sure that your team knows that they are owners in their own business and they are a valuable part of your team. But I will say, I spent many, many years thinking that it couldn't be done without me, or it couldn't be done as well as I could do it. And so taking that step back and realizing there are better task and duties for me as running the team than there are in the daily minutia of it. And I will say that the one best thing I did was hire a business coach, a real estate business coach. And he really coached me through the steps of taking a step back further and further and further. And I will proudly say that this past year, we went on a cruise for 17 days, or a whole trip for 17 days. And my team handled it flawlessly, perfectly. I wasn't involved in one problem. It was the best gift they could have ever given me.
That's awesome. You know, it's really funny because I work with a lot of startups, a lot of founder-led businesses, a lot of businesses where their founder is looking to exit because maybe they're in their 50s and 60s and they're looking at retirement in the next 3 to 5 years. And the hardest thing for them to do is to let go. And so when you said that about your 17th, congratulations, that's awesome. Yes. The first homework I give them is plan your 2-week sabbatical. Yes. It has to be in the next 2 months. And what do you need to do to make sure nothing breaks? And they do exactly that. They go,
takes your breath away. Yes.
And they're like, I can't do that. But the reality is if you don't do it, if you don't bite that bullet and take the initiative and do that little sprint to make sure that you set yourself up for success, and then test it and see what breaks. Because guess what, folks? When you do that the first time, things are not going to go as flawlessly as you think.
Absolutely.
And if you can only stomach a week, then stomach a week and build up to 2 weeks. But that is what it takes for us to get out of that mindset of, I can do it better, I can do it faster, nobody else can do it with me. Yes, that's the truth. You're entrepreneurs. That's why you own the business. Our teams are not entrepreneurs. They didn't start this up. They work with us and for us. And yes, they take ownership of their own role, but we're the ones who took the risk and did the work. So no one will ever perform the way we perform for our businesses or our investor, whatever we're doing. But 75% is good enough, because what does that free up for you so you could do the higher value tasks? Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing that. It's really important. But that mindset, I just really wanted to drive home. It is so important for us as founders to let go. What are you having a hard time letting go now? Because you've been through this, you've been coached through this, and you've lived it. What are you having a hard time letting go right now?
You know, if we have an really important client or a really big deal or something like that, it is hard to turn some of that over, especially if they're like a lifetime friend or a lifetime client. It is harder to turn that over and not be like, what are they doing today? What's happening today? What's going on today? But I also know that I have given myself some health issues over the years. And that is from not letting go. And so I've had some really hard conversations with doctors about chill out. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? And so everyone's chill out is different, but I had to realize what mine was. And mine was letting go of a little bit of control. Because as you know, as drivers, control is our thing.
Yep, it really is. And you know, as high performers, it's our thing too. And folks, if you're listening to this and you're seeing yourself, listen, I was there. I still am there. Every time I'm starting up, I am addicted to startups. I don't recommend this addiction. I can't help myself. I love solving problems and starting up. That's the hardest thing you could possibly do, is start up a business. But I am so hyper focused and a high performer, and I want to achieve those results, and I know that I'm going to do whatever it takes to get there. But not necessarily everybody that I've hired has that same drive. I have to take that deep breath, and for me, it's take a deep breath, and I have someone who monitors me, and literally I can't go to my team and say, why didn't you get this right? I have somebody that I go, I can't believe it, they didn't do this right the first time, or the deadline was yesterday and I still don't have it. And she goes and she smooths it over and has that communication, because what's wrong, like, it's not wrong, but I'm an uber direct, blunt person. And the thing that bothers me the most is perceived incompetence. Don't tell me you're going to do something or be able to do something and then not deliver on that.
Correct.
And so, but that's a me thing.
Right.
I had to learn that. We all have that. So I'm giving this example because you heard it from Amy. You're hearing it from me. If you are feeling this, today's the day to say, okay, yes, I hear you, Jen. Yes, I hear you, Amy. I need to let go of something.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to challenge you to think about that thing that you're micromanaging to the nth degree, the thing that's keeping you up at night, because that's impacting your health. And that's what you need to let go first. And I want you guys to reach out to me, like reach out and let us know, because this has been a great conversation. We want the feedback. Like, what is it that you're letting go so that we can keep up with that? Mm-hmm. So Amy, let's go to your team, and you've invested in your team. What is the best investment you made in your team so far?
I think just time, you know, giving them time of my own and then teaching them how to grow themselves, teaching them how to have goals, set goals. What is the next goal? What do you want more of? What do you want to do better? You know, I always say if you can get 1% better every single day, you're doing good. But if you're stagnant and you don't know what to do, come ask, like, immediately. We can fix that problem. A lot of times people don't live their life as a real estate professional as they should. They let too many personal things get in the way. And I think that's a worst thing you can do. Live your real estate life just like it is a regular job, not just like, oh, I like to go see houses, I can work my schedule around other people's. No, this is a real job, and if you work it like that, it will pay off.
That's fantastic. Thank you for that. So folks, the greatest lessons you can learn isn't how to make money. It's how to make your money work for you. It's how to set the boundaries so that you are operating and your business is supporting the life that you want. It's creating the business that is going to support the life you want today and tomorrow. And as Amy said, tomorrow's tomorrow. In our final segment coming up, we're going to talk about what's next, the trends Amy's watching, the opportunities she sees, and the mindset that every entrepreneur needs if they want to create wealth in the next decade. Coming right up. Welcome back to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. I'm Jen Godin, and I'm here with Amy Lippincott. And we've talked about everything from starting your own business, starting up a business, to buying into a business, buying a franchise, to becoming an investor, and how to bring our teams with us. And now I want to dive into the entrepreneurs who win the next decade are not going to just build businesses. They're going to be building portfolios, ecosystems. Amy, one thing that stands out is your ability to look around the corner. It's almost like you've got a little mirror and you're seeing what's coming. You're always asking what's next. I want to explore that and ask you, how are you evaluating future opportunities? We are in a world of rapid change, artificial intelligence, robotics, quantum's coming down. Like how are you paying attention to what to invest and what opportunities are coming in the future for you?
So again, it's all about watching what your mentors are doing and the people who have been way more successful. And so the things I see is that real estate professionals do want to have that one-stop shop. Like they're adding things like a hard money company. They're adding things like a lending company. They're adding a property management company. They're adding a title company, all the things that make them a one-stop shop. And that is definitely our goal. So whatever comes to me that fits into our real estate world, is it a pool company? Is it whatever it is that I think people might need for real estate? I want to add that. The other important thing I think is owning your own office. And so that's been key to us also as we bought our own office. We're renting a room out to our lender. We're renting a room out to a landscaping company and making that office work, our money work for us there also. And then another key thing I see with people is more family investing. Providing a future for their kids, like building a company that their kids can work at, that their kids can own one day, that their kids can then grow. I would love the opportunity to own everything that all of my teammates' kids could. Hey, you get out of college, which company would you like to work for? Which one are you the most qualified for? Because we have it here available for you.
That's an awesome vision. So let me ask you, what trends are you paying attention to today that maybe are outside of the real estate vertical that you're bringing into real estate? And let me give you an example. Sometimes, for example, in marketing, a lot of real estate agents market in the same way, but maybe something that's happening in medical marketing is completely new and innovative in real estate. And when you use that technique, all of a sudden it sets you out apart from the rest. So what trends are you paying attention to today? And what opportunities are you seeing from other industries that are elevating your investment opportunities and your business?
Well, I definitely think it's AI. I mean, everything and all things AI are what I feel like are coming soon. And so being able to talk to people like you and find out what's coming in the market and what things are happening in your world that I could apply to our world are such a big deal. And so those kind of things are what I'm looking at.
And so how should the people who are watching the show, entrepreneurs in watching the show, even investors, what would you like for them to take away from our conversation today that could be the opportunity for them today or tomorrow?
I think be bold and trust yourself and find some, like we said multiple times, find some good mentors, but also be looking at things that fit your lifestyle. Like don't go buy, you know, a veterinarian business if you don't care anything about animals, but find something that's also passionate for you. Like I can sell tea all day long because I love our tea and I love our shirts and I love all the things surrounded by that. And I love the environment and I love the community that built that. So find things too, if you're going to be involved in it, if you're gonna be an outside investor, sure, just invest in where the numbers are. But if you're going to be involved in it, it needs to be something that you also feel passionate about.
Oh, I agree. And actually, it's funny because I did the invest in other things and I have actually shifted my investment to what do I know and what am I passionate about moving forward? Because I'm an active investor in some of the companies, which means I'm strategic for them. So Who in my network, I look at opportunities, I go, okay, if I'm going to give you money and I'm going to write a check, how am I mitigating the risk? And if I have enough connections to make my money back, I hold that back. I don't offer it. But if worst case scenario happens, I could pull on my relationships and make this happen to protect my investment. Like, I look at it from that perspective. So, of course, I'm in the medical and the technical heavier than anything else because I come from medicine. I'm in AI. So, like, I'm looking at it from a how do I protect my investment differently today? And I didn't even think about that 5-10 years ago.
Right.
So I think it's really interesting. And so the next question I have for you is, what opportunities do you see coming around the corner? And you kind of touched on AI, but are there any others that are really exciting to you in your vertical?
So for me, I think because the age of my children is how to teach them now how to do this. So for example, when my son went to college, we helped him buy a home there. And then we put renters in there that were his football friends. And then we taught him how to collect rent, how to be a property manager, how to have a bank account, how to do all of those things. And then we sold the house, used a 1031 exchange to then buy another one here. So all of those things we're teaching him to do too. So teaching the next generation how to be involved in this and to do it from a much younger age. I didn't start doing all this until I was 45 years old. Too late. I mean, you know, we're making it work.
It's never too late.
It's never too late. But I wish I had started doing it 20 years ago. And so I'm hoping to spark some interest in some of the younger generation also.
Yeah, you know, and actually I find that the younger generation tends to be a little bit more entrepreneurial. I mean, they're young. They're they're less risk averse. They're kind of getting their sea legs. Anyway, so I think that's really fantastic. And what an amazing opportunity for generational wealth that is knowledge. Because one of the things I tell everyone that I work with, and I firmly believe this, there's two things that no one can take away from us. It's our knowledge and it's our integrity. And so even if everything collapsed and I have to start over from scratch tomorrow, I still have my knowledge and I still have my integrity.
Amen.
And so I think that's really fantastic that you're teaching the kids that and the younger generation. And so let me ask, moving forward, real estate has changed a lot.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, I used to invest in single family. I don't do that anymore. I moved into bigger deals. But really, it's hard to make money in some areas of real estate. So what role for someone who's not already investing in real estate does real estate play? And what do you see coming in the next, you know, 2 years, 5 years in that industry from an investment standpoint?
So much more commercial development and investing in, instead of single family homes as much, in multiplex, fourplexes, eightplexes, and then even commercial strips are super popular around here now. And then being able to lease that back out to somebody is even more important. Like, what is that feel going to look like? What goal are you looking for when you're leasing that out, and who are you putting there? What's around you? What's the travel count? You know, all of those things are key. But I really feel like we're moving towards, yes, I still think there are some residential neighborhoods that hold good value and that you can still buy some rental houses in, just like what we did for my son. But I do feel like we're moving towards bigger, better opportunities with multiple investors at once.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And let me ask you the next question. What are entrepreneurs in your circle, maybe, or people that you touch as clients or whatnot, what are they underinvesting in?
That's a really good question. Themselves, number one.
Okay, so what does what is the right level of investment in yourself?
I think you have to judge that by what you can do financially, and then who can you go out and borrow money from? Who can you add as a partner for you? But I think people are hesitant and scared, so they stay stuck right where they are instead of going out and getting that knowledge and going out and find that person that you can do that with or that opportunity. And it takes a lot of research to find that person and find that opportunity. But I think that's really hard, is that people get stuck in themselves or just the day-to-day minutia of what you're doing that you don't spend the extra time to go find those opportunities. That's one thing. And then the other thing I think that people get stuck in is just fear of the unknown.
I would agree with you. So, Amy, we unfortunately are getting towards the end of our episode, and I want people to be able to reach out to you. So before I run out of time, how can people reach out to you if they want to learn more, if they're interested in any of these real estate verticals, if maybe they are looking for somebody to help them through their real estate journey, or if they are looking at buying a business, how can they reach out to you?
So my phone number is 832-392-8818. My email is amylippincott@gmail.com. Very simple. We have a very nice website, thelippincottteam.com. We're all over all of the socials. You can find us on any of the different socials, and you can see a little bit about our personality. We try to do some serious things, some learning, and then also host and show our personality of that we like to have fun and that we like to grow our team.
And so now I'm going to ask you, what is the biggest lesson that entrepreneurship has taught you personally?
That as a woman, you can do it. You can do anything that you want to do, that you put your mind to, and that you are surrounded by people who, because in teaching, I was surrounded by lots of touchy-feely, feel-good things. When we got out here and asked someone to share some of their ideas and stuff, I was kind of shut down. And so I've learned that you don't have to do things by yourself. You can involve other people and trust other people, and just be careful who you trust.
Oh, fantastic. And now I'm going to put that to your biggest lesson in investing.
To go slow and to be sure of what you're investing in as much as you possibly can, and then to do the work to research and make sure that you know what you're doing.
Yeah, and get the right people to help you along the way too. Absolutely. Thank you so much. So folks, this has been so amazing. Thank you for your expertise. We have some great takeaways. Ask yourself, what asset am I building? Not what income am I generating? Amy, this has been a fascinating conversation, because underneath the real estate, the franchises, the investments, and the partnerships, it's a much bigger lesson. The entrepreneurs who create lasting wealth stop thinking transactionally. They stop asking, what can I earn, and start asking, what can I own? They move from producer to owner, from owner to investor, and eventually from investor to opportunity creator, which is what you just heard today on this show. That's where your wealth compounds, it's where freedom lives, and it's where the next chapter begins. Thank you so much for being here, Amy. I really appreciate your expertise.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Make sure you reach out to Amy and the Lippincott team for any of your needs. And for everyone watching, make sure you connect with me on LinkedIn. Give me feedback. Let me know what it is you want to hear and what questions you have. Join the Power CEOs Facebook group, because the truth behind the business is this: success creates income, ownership creates wealth. We have just talked about that today. And the reality is, if you're just listening and you're not taking action, you're not going to go anywhere. The magic is in the integration and the implementation. So pick one thing you heard today and take action right now, not tomorrow, not next week, but right now, so that momentum can carry you forward and leave you a little bit further ahead than you were before you started this show. Unfortunately, all good things come to an end, including this show. But the good news is, we'll be here same time, same station next week. So until then, win today, win this week, and we'll see you next time.